Folding Pocket.
Hello and welcome back to The Fast and the Curious. We are only two races in, but there is a lot to talk about on and off the track. I'm Betty Glover, joined as always by everyone's favourite Formula One nerd, expert, I guess friend as well, Christian Hugill.
What do you mean, I guess friend? I thought we were friends before we started the podcast. Like, we've been doing this a year. Have we not graduated into friends yet?
Yeah, we're best mates.
Best mates.
My best mates.
Thank you. Better. Yes, welcome along. If you're listening, of course, on Spotify or Apple or Google, which is a bit odd if you listen to your podcast on Google, I think. I just think that's a bit weird. But anyway, apparently people do. But not only can you do that, you can also watch us on YouTube from our shiny brand new studio. If you've not done already, go onto YouTube, search for The Fast and the Curious and hit subscribe to watch us in glorious Technicolor as well as listening to us too.
Yeah, do that. No team principal Greg James with us today because he's had to take his dog Barney to the vet. So we're sending them lots and lots of love.
Get
right?
Well, Barney. Just before we started recording, like literally just sent us a selfie of Greg and Barney in the like vet waiting room. Barney looks so sad.
He did. He's
hurt his leg.
Yes,
he's gonna have to have a checkup.
I'm sure he'll be fine.
He will be fine.
He'll be fine, right?
Yeah,
he will be fine. He will be fine, right, Christian?
He'll be fine. He'll be fine.
Anyway, moving on from Barney, although I would love to just talk about Barney this whole episode.
Oh my God, we need to get him in the studio 1 week. I just want him sat on the sofa next to me. Just there.
Anyway, we've got loads to get through in this episode because there's been a race weekend.
There's been a race.
Woo!
Sorry, I missed that. What was that?
Woo!
Oh, I enjoyed that noise. That was lovely. Very nice.
Thanks. So we've got the Saudi Grand Prix to go through, as well as the first weekend of F1 Academy. There's, of course, been a lot going on off the track as well that we're not going to ignore. We've got a lot of thoughts, feelings and questions that have been sent in into our DMs. So many, in fact, that we're also going to be joined by, on the sofa, by a listener called Ellie Keem, who started our F1 journey at pretty much the same time we launched this exact show.
Well, I think we got her into it.
We got her into Formula
which
One,
is,
didn't we?
Do we need to apologise for that? I think she's wasted a lot of weekend time now, hasn't she?
She has indeed. We're also going to hear from Formula One TV's Laura Winter, who is presenting in the paddock in Jeddah for a taste of what it was like on the ground. But should we get started?
I think we should.
Let's talk about the Grand Prix then. This young lad called Max Verstappen, don't know if you heard of him.
I'm aware of his work, yes.
Yeah, he won it again.
Shall I just do a thing here that producer Jimmy can sort of cut into every episode? Like, hang on, just give me a sec. Well done, Max. Fantastic for Max this weekend. Dominant. They don't do anything wrong. They're perfect. They get strategy right. They drive well. And it was a really good performance from Max. There, Jimmy can just put that in every week now.
Yeah, he got his 100th podium.
In one weekend.
May as well have just been his 10,000th. It feels like it was his 10,000th podium.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we can't praise Max enough, can we? Like, again, just faultless in every single way. I do keep thinking, like, what's going to be the race where he makes a mistake? What's going to be the race where he doesn't get off the line well or clips his back wheel on a wall or... Surely it's going to happen at some point.
I feel like with 24 races this season, if it was going to happen any season, surely it's got to be this season.
Well,
think about statistics.
Saudi, it's just not easy. Like, and he makes it look easy. And I'm always worried that anyone new to Formula One will think it's really easy because of what Max has done. And it just isn't. Like, we saw Lance Stroll make a mistake. We even saw people like Fernando Alonso brush the wall. Like, it's so difficult. And Max just makes it look effortless, which it isn't.
I would love to see what Max could do in another car, wouldn't you?
How far he could bring it up.
Yeah. And I'd also love to see somebody like, obviously, Lewis in that Red Bull car to just see what he could do in that car.
The point I've raised as well is like if you put two really evenly matched drivers in, like Pierre Gasly and Esteban Ocon are really evenly matched, put them both in the two Red Bulls see what happens. Like, how good is the car? How good is Max? And I've said this before, I think it's the way they sort of merge together that makes it so special. It's the driver-car relationship is just in perfect synergy.
Made for him.
Yeah.
What do you think would happen if we put you in that Red Bull car?
Not a lot, because I'd barely be able to make it move.
Do you reckon?
So very little is the answer to that question.
So obviously, Verstappen won again, but somebody that I think had a cracking race was Checo.
Yeah, I'll say to you what I said to Greg in the Bahrain race review pod. If Checo does that every race of the year, he'll probably get his seat back for 2025. They don't need him to be on Max's tail, 2/3 off Max. They just need him to be in second place to pick up the pieces if something goes wrong. They need him in that top 3 or 4 fight. So when inevitably there's a slightly closer race, they can use him strategically and they can do an alternative strategy to make sure they've got one car at the front. They just need him to be in the picture. There was a moment when we spoke to him before the season started where Sergio said this to us. Obviously going into a new season, obviously you'll be hoping the car's as quick as last season. What is a good 2024 for Sergio Perez? What's it look like this year?
Well, just hitting that consistently, you know, not having those up and downs and really developing a good base as a team and really one that we can move forward. So will be the main target for us.
So that really interests me because what Sergio didn't say in answer to that question was what he said a lot of the time last year in the early part of the season was, I'm in a title battle. I want to be winning the title. I wonder if Sergio's had that moment before he's retired and gone, I don't think I'm going to beat Max. And that's actually not my job to beat Max. I'm a really damn good F1 driver. I'm a race-winning F1 driver. My job is to be part of this team and it's to be second. And I'll pick up race wins because of that. And I wonder if he's just more comfortable. Now, this might be completely wrong. He might still have championship aspirations, but I just think he seems more comfortable with himself.
But it makes sense, doesn't it? Because it feels like he needs to know that he's not going to compete with Max Verstappen, because no one is.
Well, Max is a generational talent, like that he's one of the all-time greats.
Interesting. So below Red Bull, we've got Ferrari at the moment, who are doing really well so far, Christian, right? Charles Leclerc says that he thinks they've got what it takes to compete with Red Bull this season. And I will believe anything that Leclerc says to me. Anything.
Why?
Anything. He could tell me to invest all of my money in orange juice and I would be there and I would do it. So I'm believing him.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Why?
Do I have to explain that?
Why?
Because I just believe what he says. He's a convincing man.
Okay, yeah. I think he's a very convincing man.
You told me that you would believe anything he told you as well. Yeah. Thank you very much. So don't just put all of this heat on me. Charles Leclerc is my Formula One guru. Mm. So anything that he says goes.
Sure.
But he's been looking good, right?
He always looks good.
Not incredible on the track, but good.
Yes. So do I think Charles is right when he says he can compete with Max? No, I don't see that so far. Unless they know something we don't, it doesn't look like anyone's taking the fight to Max. Max is winning races by a comfortable margin and probably not having to push. But they're clearly the second best team. And last year, it was never clear, really, who was the second best team, whereas it's clearly Ferrari at the moment. So in that sense, yes, they're doing a good job.
Is this a bad thing, though? Because at least last year, we had that fight for sort of second. We never knew who was going to be on the podium alongside Max, whereas now it does look like it is Red Bull and then Ferrari.
I see your point. I don't think their gap is so big that it will be a foregone conclusion that they're second every race. And I still think Mercedes and McLaren will make steps forward and Aston Martin too. I don't see them being clearly second best all season. I think it's too tight between them, Mercedes, Aston and McLaren, and the development is so important that I still think that will be an interesting battle this year. As we sit here now, they're the second fastest team. Whether that stays is a different question.
We need to talk about Ollie Bearman, don't we? Because we haven't talked about him yet.
Unbelievable.
How incredible, how impressive. 18 years old. He was born in either 2005 or 2006. Can't work it out. My maths isn't good enough. But how incredible was he?
So, get well soon, Carlos. Obviously, important to say first. Really, really sad for Carlos that he had to miss the race, because Carlos had a fantastic start to the season in Bahrain, got his podium, probably had the edge over Charles Leclerc in Bahrain. So get well soon, Carlos. Really unfortunate for him in his season where he wants to impress. But Ollie Bearman, I cannot praise him enough. That was special. That whole performance all weekend, to qualify where he did, to finish where he did, to overtake cars on track, that was special.
And the fact that he got a call from Ferrari, what was it, like two and a half hours before final practice?
It was unbelievable.
You're in the car, mate. Off you go.
It's just unbelievable. The first British driver to drive for Ferrari in years. It's astonishing. And we've also seen people jump into Ferraris because of injuries in the past. The best example is Giancarlo Fisichella, who was driving on the grid. This is going back just over a decade or so. And he was put into a Ferrari. He was already in Formula One with another team. And Giancarlo really struggled. And it proved the end of his Formula One career. He just didn't get to grips with it because it was so different to the car he was used to. And that was a seasoned good F1 driver in Giancarlo Fisichella. And Ollie Bearman this weekend has just jumped in, having never raced in Formula One before, you know, on one of the most difficult tracks. You know, you saw mistakes happen in Formula One with drivers hit the wall. Look at what happened to Lance in the race. You look at the support series in F1 Academy. In Formula Two, you saw mistakes. That is a hard track. It's one of the hardest tracks you could possibly wish to have that situation happen to you. I'm not just sitting here saying this because we're Brits, because it's exciting, because the sport needed a bit of good on track action. It's genuinely special what he did. I can't heap praise enough on him. It was fantastic, and it was exciting for us who are going to be watching F1 for decades to come, hopefully. It's just exciting.
Yeah, with everything going on off the track, all of those controversies, we needed this story from him.
It was a really feel-good story.
But I loved how chilled out he was about it, because he was sort of like, because it was so instant, he didn't even have time to think. So he was like, right, well, I don't even have time to get nervous.
His dad said a lovely thing. His dad was interviewed on Sky just before the race. And he said, you know, and I can't remember who did the interview, but they said, what's the expectation on him? And his dad said, there's no expectation on him, just that he enjoys it. And I thought that was a lovely thing. He'll have good people around him taking the pressure off him. But it's the sign of a great that they're not fazed by it. The sign of someone that's going to be really, really good in this sport, that they're not fazed by it. We've said it a lot with Oscar. Think back to the first time we ever spoke to him, and Greg commented how still Oscar was and how calm. Because it's what they're born to do. It's what they're put on this earth to do. They take it in their stride. They're not fazed by it, as opposed to drivers who you can see struggling with nerves and expectation, anticipation, pressure. He looked like he took it all in his stride at 18. Fantastic. That is not his last Formula One race.
I'll get onto that in a second, but also testament to the sport that they have this sort of, the way that it's sort of laid out and planned, that they're able to bring up these young drivers, like Liam Lawson, for example, as well.
I think
that impressed when he had to step up.
We've got a good crop at the moment, and this is not always the case, but we've got a good crop of drivers who could take the step up to Formula One, I believe. There's a good number of young drivers who would be ready to take that step.
Seventh. Will Ferrari be really pleased with his performance? Yeah,
over the moon. Over the moon. It, you know, when Aston are competitive, McLaren are competitive, you know, you look at the people he finished ahead of, you know, and Ferrari are thinking, we're going to be in a tight battle for the Constructors' Championship with Mercedes this year. To have a driver miss and barely have any damage done, all right, Carlos might have got a couple of places higher. Wonderful performance from Ollie. Brilliant for Ferrari. A proper feel-good story for the weekend.
And you say this isn't going to be the last that we see of him in a Formula One car. Where do you think he's going? Haas?
Well,
could he go to Haas?
Yeah, and I got asked why Haas. So do I think he'll be on the grid next year? Yes, I do. And there was already rumblings of him being on the grid next year. Ferrari have a bit of a relationship with Haas because Haas have Ferrari engines. So I think it's, and also, let's be honest, Haas have two drivers who are closer to the end of their time in Formula One than the start. I think it's incredibly likely that he'll be at Haas next year. It's a good possibility. It might not be Haas, though, because you also look at, again, there's going to be lots of movement. Alpine's drivers are out of contract. There could be other movements with the Mercedes seat. Ferrari are going to want to keep hold of Ollie Bearman. He is part of that team's future. You know, Lewis won't be around forever. We know it's going to be Leclerc and Lewis at Ferrari next season and for probably two or three seasons after. But you'd put good money on Ollie Bearman to replace Lewis Hamilton down the line when Lewis decides to call it a day.
We had a DM in from...
A DM in?
We had a DM.
Oh, yeah.
We had a DM in from Lucy, who said, I've always wondered how they managed to change stuff so quickly. The garage signs and the numbers on the car all became Ollie Bearman so quickly. Is it literally just stickers, or do they sort of have different parts? How does it work?
Well, firstly, Lucy, thanks for your DM in. I really appreciate that.
You're so annoying.
Rude. I thought I knew the answer to this question, but had to check with a couple of paddock sources. I sort of presumed I knew how this worked, and I was right, but I didn't know this for sure. It's a really good question. It's basically printers are part of the freight. So the certain parts of the car's livery that's not coming off, but the number is one of those that effectively is a very good quality sticker that can be taken on and off should it need to, should a driver need to come out. We actually saw this in action when we watched Mercedes Shakedown, because we saw George, when they only had one car at that point, and we saw George and Lewis do a really quick turnaround. And it confuses all, because all the, you know, George's and Lewis's numbers are different. And it was like, that was quick. It is just because it's literally quite quick stickers.
The stress. Can you imagine if it was like a normal sticker and you accidentally peel it off wrong and then you get like that under bit of the sticker
the
and you're
push
there
the bubble
just like,
out. Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't get it off.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about Mercedes next? Because I just don't understand what is happening there, Christian. What's happening? Well, because we had a lot, I pinned a lot of my hopes on Mercedes. I looked Toto Wolff in the eye and I said, look, Toto, we need something from you this season. You are going to have to step up. We can't have another year like it.
And he said that he felt the pressure specifically from you as well, didn't he?
He did.
Let alone the F1 community, you.
Just me personally. On
Betty
my own.
Glover. Betty Elizabeth Glover. Is that your name?
No, it's not my name.
I just guessed.
Did you get that from?
Just made it up. I think the problem is Mercedes don't fully understand. So F1 teams have simulators and they are able to check how their cars work and run and feel and make adjustments in the simulator. It seems at the moment there is something in that process going a bit wrong. That Mercedes simulator, that, you know, they're changing the car in the sim and saying, if we do this to it, it will do that. And then they go out on track.
And it's not working.
That seems to be a problem. What it means is another person you just said we spoke to, Mick Schumacher.
This is what I was just about to ask you.
Yeah, they are going to be busy. They are going to be busy reprogramming the simulator.
Mick must be thinking, for God's sake, I've wasted all this time on this simulator, doing all this testing for you, and it's just wrong anyway.
Yeah, they thought they had a more predictable car. It turns out they don't. And that's why, as we said earlier, Ferrari are currently the second quickest team.
Bad times for Mercedes. Good times, though, for Haas.
Haas really interests me because there was a point in the weekend where they cut to the shot of the team on the pit wall, as they do several times during a race. But Komatsu, the team principal, was so animated on the pit wall. It was a proper example of leading from the front. He was doing his pointing. He was talking to everyone. They saw an opportunity to sacrifice one driver's race in Kevin Magnussen in order to get Nico a point.
Yes.
And they executed it perfectly. And that's what you've got to do in Formula One. You've got to take advantage of these tiny, if the door opens ajar, you've got to force yourself through it. I think under Komatsu, Haas have made a step forward.
Kevin Magnussen, such an interesting drive from him because he made some mistakes and then he was, you know, going really slow. Some people were frustrated with it. Some people loved his tactics. What did you think?
I thought it was a bit of a joke. Now, Haas have done nothing wrong here. Haas have taken advantage of the rules. And I've just said they deserve credit for this. This is not a dig at Haas. Kevin's made two mistakes and got given two 10-second penalties. One was for running Albon into the wall, and that was a stonewall 10-second penalty. That was not good driving from Kevin Magnussen. He deserved that penalty. Then he got a second 10-second penalty, 20 seconds altogether. But due to the way F1 currently has penalties, the sport is governed by the FIA. It's the FIA who make these decisions. It's a 10-second penalty added on to the race time. Now, when I was growing up watching the sport, you didn't see that. What you had is stop-go penalties. So if you drove someone into the wall, you'd get a 5-second stop-go penalty, 10-second stop-go penalty, whatever, and you'd have a certain number of laps to come into the pits, stop, cars can't be touched for 10 seconds, then they can make changes if they want, but regardless, then they're leaving the pits. 10-second penalty. Or then a bit later, into the 2000s, you had a drive-through penalty, where you had to drive through the pits. That's quite similar to MotoGP, who have a long lap penalty, where the driver has to do an extra bit of a lap. F1 hasn't got this at the moment. It's got time. Well, they could do, but they don't do. They have time penalties. But what it enables you to do is, Kevin's got a 20-second time penalty. It's like, okay, effectively race ruined. He's gained an advantage illegally by forcing Albon into the wall. But then they can just leave him there, which to me is a nonsense because He's gained that position illegally, but he doesn't have to move.
Tactics.
Nico was very good. Well done, Haas. They deserve all the credit in the world. But bit naughty.
Producer Jimmy thinks he's being really funny here. Because when you're talking about penalties, he says, what about drive-through penalty? Maybe picking up a Big Mac and then race again.
Yeah, Producer Jimmy loves the term drive-through penalty.
Yeah, obsessed.
So maybe you do, maybe that is a thing. Maybe instead of a 5-second penalty or a stop-go penalty, it's a drive-through penalty. But that the severity of it depends on the size of the meal. So if someone's done something really bad, it's a Big Mac penalty. You've got to go and eat a whole Big Mac.
With two sides. And a Diet Coke in that car.
Whereas if it's something minor, like what would have been a 5-second penalty, it's a 6 Chicken McNuggets drive-through penalty. That's all you have to eat.
And imagine if that didn't sit well with you.
Yeah.
After that, you're in real trouble.
Sits well with you. Well, we've spoken a lot about Saudi Arabia, but we should speak to somebody who was actually there in the paddock. A little bit of a spy in the camp for us. Welcome for a podcast debut. One of my favourite people in Formula One, F1 TV presenter, Laura Winter. Laura, what a joy it is to have you on the Fast and the Curious.
It is a joy to be here. Thank you so much. What an intro as well. I've got to live up to that now. That was a lot. Thank you.
Laura, don't feel too good about yourself because he literally says everyone's his favourite person.
That's not
Christian,
true.
That's it.
He always drops me in it. That's not true. I said one of. But
that's true. That's
certainly
true.
Don't say everyone. You're not one of my favourite people in
the
sport.
No, that's true.
You're
I've dropped right down the pecking list, haven't I?
Laura's nice to me. You ought to try it sometime.
Laura, how are you? How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I've very carefully positioned this camera so that you can't see the vast amount of unpacking, which is just lying on the sofa here and needs to go in the wardrobe. So I'm good in between Saudi Arabia and then Australia. So it's kind of like bit of a detox, calm down, everything's fine week before we go again.
Laura, I was going through your Instagram, right? And the one thing that really stood out to me was the fact that you got to drive an F4 car, which is such a cool experience. What was that like?
Who am I? I have no idea how I managed that, honestly. I was so nervous. So I did 5 laps in the safety car being driven, just learning the track, understanding the lines.
And this is the Bahrain track, Laura.
Yeah, the Bahrain track. Yeah. This was just before testing as well. So I hadn't even been back working in Formula One yet. So I was like, I have no right to be on this track yet.
God.
And then 5 laps following the safety car behind, and then 5 laps on my own. And by the time we got to the final 5 laps, there wasn't anybody else on the track. Before that, we'd had an F2 passenger ride going on as well. So I was kind of having to just be a bit careful to keep out of their way because they were going a lot faster than I was. And suddenly I have the Bahrain track to myself and I'm sitting there strapped into this little box and you're, you know, this far off the ground. And I can't say I was going the quickest, but I think I probably hit over 200k an hour down the straights.
Wow.
And I could feel the forces of it and I could feel it in my face. I'd love to have seen like my actual face and how like ridiculous it looked. I could feel my helmet and the air rushing up and everything. The G-force on the body through the like sector 2 through the S's as well. It was absolutely incredible. But I think it was also quite, and everyone laughs at me about this because I appreciate that Formula One driving, single-seater driving, isn't meant to be relaxing. It's not. But I found it very relaxing and calming because it was just me on track. There was no pressure. There was no stopwatch. I had no radio. I was just sitting in this little box strapped in, going 200k an hour down the straights and then thinking, right, hit your braking mark, you know, turn in, corner, apex, on the throttle, go. And that's all you're thinking about the whole time is getting your lines right, making sure you're on the throttle, you just are so in the moment. And I've got a very busy brain normally that's always thinking about something over here and something over here. And I need to do that tomorrow and I better do that now. And so for me, it was just a real moment of like calmness. But I'm not sure what that says about me that I find driving 200k an hour in a single seater calming. Compared to normal life.
I don't think I'd be calm.
Well, I mean, you're not calm in any situation in life, but it strikes me that you'd have probably been a great racing driver, Laura. That's, you know, you say soak up the pressure. You know,
well,
sounds like you're born for it.
That. I'm actually dying to get back out. It's given me a whole new appreciation and understanding as well of the sport and of what it's like. And I kind of get the like that addiction side of it where they just want to get back in the car. And it is an incredible feeling. But gosh, it's claustrophobic. In the car, it's like you are in, strapped in, can't move. It's a lot. And the thought of being on track with other cars and going at that pace and hitting your corner and not, and actually having to worry, oh, hang on, is someone on the inside? Is someone on my outside? Like, in terms of having to like defend your position, go for times, you know, every millimeter counts, every millisecond counts. That's a different, an entirely different ball game to the one I was playing on my own on track. But yeah, it's incredible. And I was so chuffed to see F1 Academy have such an incredible start as well to this season. I think we're going to have a really good battle between Dorian Pin and Abby Pulling throughout the season. I think that's going to be one to watch.
This is what I wanted to talk to you about, because they race in F4 cars, right? So has this given you like a whole new appreciation for what these women are doing?
100%. And they're sort of 16 to 25 year olds as well. I am, dear reader, not 16 to 25 anymore. So yeah, it's made me just realize that they are, and also they'll be going so much faster than I was, right? And also when we get the girls onto our shows as well as guests, they are incredible. They are brilliant, brilliant talkers. They have a real understanding of the sport, of the teams. They are just embedded now within Formula One teams and learning so much. And yeah, they're absolutely incredible. And it was brilliant to see so many of them at the weekend.
Yeah, and we previewed the new season on the last episode of The Fast and the Curious, Laura. And you mentioned those drivers. Chloe Grant, who was racing in the series last year, is our sort of Fast and Curious F1 Academy correspondent. Now, she predicted a double win for Dorian Pin this weekend, which didn't quite happen due to an incredibly unique situation with the missing the checkered flag. And Doria missed it, and her team missed the fact that she'd missed it because they were all celebrating, but it gave Abby Pulling the win in the second race, Dorian winning the first race. As you've just touched upon there, Laura, the racing was good fun, and it looks like there's going to be a proper old battle between those two this season. It was a really good start for the series, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I mean, Dorian Pin had something like 7/8 tenths in qualifying, but then actually when it came to race one, I think over the line, Abby kept it to well within a second.
Yeah.
And in then the second race as well, it was just over a second, maybe just a smidge under two. So look, I think what it's going to do, Dorian's obviously come in with so much experience and she is the one to beat right now. There's no getting away from that. But the rest of that field are going to massively up their game. The rest of the women are just going to step on. I know Abby is already thinking of ways to beat her. And she said to me in the paddock on Saturday evening, she came onto our post-race show and she just said, she's beatable. I can do this. She is beatable.
Oh,
so already. Ooh.
Fighting,
yeah,
talk. That's what we like.
And I think she was closer, with the greatest of respect to Abby. As Laura says, given Dorian's incredible racing CV, I think she was closer than many, including myself, were expecting. So that's a really exciting fight. Moving back onto F1, Laura, we were just chatting before we started speaking to you about obviously one of the stories of the weekend being Ollie Bearman. And you obviously spoke to him throughout the weekend on F1 TV. To me, looking from the outside and watching on the telly, it looked like he just soaked it up and didn't feel the pressure in a similar way to like Oscar Piastri does. He just doesn't seem to look fazed.
Yeah.
Was that the case on the ground when you were talking to him, Laura?
I think so. Ollie is 18, right? And I heard a story that when he was told, okay, you need to stop thinking about F2 because you're going to be driving a Formula One car today. You're making your debut in Formula One. Apparently, he got his little backpack on. He was in the F2 paddock. And it's like he was leaving primary school to go to secondary school. Put his little bag on and like ran to the gate. And he was like, see you guys, I've got to go.
And like ran got my pencil the case, I'm ready to go.
I know, bless him. Honestly, you forget, 18 years old, like I was falling out of nightclubs. I just finished my A-levels. Like, I was nowhere near
unbelievable
being able to stand up and be on television and talk in the way that, you know, these lads are. And the girls as well in F1 Academy, some of the sort of 16 to 18 year olds too. And I think then I spoke to him at the driver's parade, right, which is where it's actually like a really, again, a bit like school. It's a really odd thing. We put all the drivers on a weird truck and we parade them around the racetrack for all the fans. But it's like an open top bus. So it's kind of, again, like a weird school trip. It's a bit odd. Anyway, they all pile on. I love doing it. And I'm asking the questions. And Ollie gets on and he comes over to me for his interview and he starts just staring into space, like into space. And I'm like, and they're like, cue Laura. And I'm like, Ollie, are you with us? Like,
Hello.
Are you having some sort of out of body experience? What is going on? And then he was like, I think my team are somewhere. And I was like, I know, Ollie, but we are on air. They are green, like red light. We're recording. This is happening now. come on, Ollie. Bless him. And then it was such a lovely moment because we got him just as he went past his team, who were there all cheering on the sidelines for him. So it was magic to get, to get that moment. It was lovely.
Another thing that we really wanted to talk to you about was something that you said on air, which wasn't talking to the drivers, but it was something that sort of summed up how quite a few Formula One fans, female fans in particular, are probably feeling, and also women that are also working in the sport. Obviously, there's that ongoing situation behind the scenes at Red Bull with allegations around Christian Horner's inappropriate behaviour. The woman who originally made these allegations against him has been suspended. Christian Horner denies the claims and over the weekend said that it was time to draw a line under the issue. But it's still, I guess, really unclear how things are going to end. And it's, of course, quite uncomfortable for a lot of the F1 community to sort of pretend that this isn't going on. And you said something on F1 TV that you went viral for your speech when you were broadcasting. Can you sort of sum up to us what you said without repeating it word for word? Because we're not going to ask you to do that. But it would be great to just...
A minute and a half. Yeah. Barbie monologue, honestly. Basically, what I said was that I wanted to... It felt to me that we were in a bit of a perfect storm, right? And we've been building up to the Friday. It was the start of F1 Academy. We were in Saudi Arabia, okay? That's a kingdom in which, before 2018, it was illegal for women to drive. So F1 Academy is starting in Saudi Arabia. That's already huge. That already feels seismic. And then you obviously have, as you said, the background to which we are starting this Formula One season as well. And so I basically said, after recent news stories and headlines, it has not been easy to be a woman working in Formula One. I sort of stated how proud I was to be one and to share the paddock with some brilliant, brilliant women. And we should celebrate them, as too we should celebrate the male allies in the sport as well, because there are so many of them and they are truly working with us to help us make that paddock a more inclusive, a safe and a better place for everybody as well. And then I felt that female fans needed to hear that I and we understand and we have listened. And I think I was starting to get a bit of, not heat, but a bit of commentary on social media to say, what do you think about this? What are you saying? What are you doing? How will you address this? And so I just sort of wanted to really emphasize that females working in motorsport, women and girls in motorsport, and the huge, and I think growing female fan base as well, because that's key, because the Drive to Survive demographic has brought in such a wide variety and diverse new fan base to the sport that needs to be listened to and need to be heard and are so valued as well. And so I just said that, you know, to the women and girls in motorsport, we are here to stay and we are right where we belong. And then threw to something else and stood there and thought, oh God, what did I just say?
No, it was honestly, Laura, it was amazing. And you got such a big reaction. But you're right, because I had a few messages also saying like, well, what do you think about the whole Horner situation? And it's really hard to sort of know what to say, but you dealt with it so incredibly well. What reaction did you have? Because I have seen some of the comments on social media, but I guess people would have been messaging you individually as well.
Yeah, it's been very overwhelming. And I think when you do make a stand in a way for something and speak out, I sort of knew I was opening myself up to all the internet can offer. but I think for me, though, it was so overwhelmingly positive, and not just positive, but just so heartwarming and really overwhelming. And I think I said something that I really felt I needed to say. And I'm not going out on a whim saying I'm the only woman who's thought this. I'm certainly not. And I think I was in a position where I was able to say something on a platform that was based on conversations I'd had at the paddock, that was based on how I knew and felt that women were feeling and thinking, you know. And I think the reaction from the fans showed that it was something that people really needed to hear as well. And not just female fans, but male fans too. And I just hope it helps some fans out there feel that F1 is still a place for them. Because I've had a message from a girl who said basically she'd switched off at the weekend. She had not wanted to watch free practice. She wasn't going to watch qualifying. She wasn't going to watch the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix because she didn't feel comfortable that she had a place in the sport that she wanted to. And she said she'd seen what we said online, and she, that made her switch on Quali. And it's like, it's such a small thing, but that kind of thing made me just realize that, yeah, there was an impact, and I'm very grateful I got the opportunity for it.
There was an impact, and you said there, Laura, and by the way, you did nail it, absolutely nail it.
Thank you. And
that's not easy to do in the first place, standing in that paddock. I've done it, you know, and focusing on what you're trying to say. It's a busy environment. There's lights on you. That's not easy in itself. But you said there about not just female fans, because I sat and thought, you know, I work in the sport full time now, and sat there in my little work from home den thinking, why do I feel a bit weird this week? This just, you know, I just felt weird about everything.
Yeah.
And actually, Laura sort of put into words better than I'd managed to in my brain.
Oh my
just
God.
Sort of,
same.
Yeah,
same.
How everyone was feeling. And sometimes you do need someone to just talk about it, to sort of recognise your own feelings. And when I watched Laura's moment on social media, it was like, that's it, isn't it? That's exactly how I'm feeling. So it did help. And also, I'm such a believer. I talk about this in a lot of, you know, me being a gay F1 fan and doing a lot of work with Racing Pride. I speak a lot about feeling a duty of responsibility as a tiny, tiny little part of F1 to go to places like Saudi Arabia, as Laura said, and spread values of positivity and inclusion and diversity. And Laura, you did that so brilliantly well. And F1 should be very, very proud of you as a sport and as a community, because you nailed it. So it helped me process what was going on, feel, and I think you helped a lot of others with that speech, Laura. So bloody nicely done.
Can I just say though that I would not have been able to do it without the support of a team behind me as well. So you know, Joe, producer Joe, who we always talk about on air as sort of someone who hurries along the show and we like to annoy by going off on tangents, she was there to kind of script out that running order and make sure that we had a place for it, and the wider team as well were very much in support. So I really appreciate every single one of them, and I couldn't have done it without them for sure.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You made your debut on The Fast and the Curious.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I feel like this is your biggest sort of accomplishment of this year so far.
Definitely.
Having talked about
everything that you've done, this is it. This tops it all.
No, this is it. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Laura, we're going to let you finish your packing, sort your room out that's going on behind you.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on, Laura. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
So obviously, like we were saying with Laura, a lot's going on in the world of Formula One at the moment. And there's obviously been that one particular story that sort of pushed the sport outside of the normal F1 bubble, and not in a good way at all.
Yeah, but the best thing that I think about this podcast, Christian, is that we like to give Formula One fans, you guys that like to listen and watch this podcast, your space to be able to let us know what you're thinking, what you're feeling, particularly around a time like this. I think that's really, really important, isn't it? So we asked our Instagram followers how they feel about being Formula One fans in the last couple of weeks. And we had so many replies. A lot of them were along the lines of what Madeline sent in during the Grand Prix. She said, it's exhausting and disappointing at the moment. I'm loving all of the racing this weekend, but it's hard being a Formula One fan at the moment. It feels a little bit tainted. So we wanted to go through all of this feedback properly. And so we're joined by Ellie Kime. Ellie, I told you I was going to get your name wrong.
I'll answer to most things. It's fine.
I just can't do it. I read the words and they just jumble in my head.
I mean, names are made up anyway, so call me what you want.
I will call you by your proper name. Ellie Kime in the studio. To look through all of these comments, also let us know how you're feeling being a woman in Formula One at the moment, because, you know, a female fan, it's not the nicest of atmospheres, is it, I guess?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Ellie, welcome along. Welcome to your first time in our studio, but far from your first time on the podcast, because for Fast and Curious devotees who've been with us since the very start, Ellie, you were one of our first ever sort of callers, listeners to come onto the podcast, because you started your F1 journey at almost exactly the same time that we launched the podcast, partly because of this podcast. Mm-hmm. So Welcome back. Have you found it since then?
Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, as you say, recently it's been a bit of a wild ride, hasn't it, being an F1 fan? But yeah, loved my first full season last year. Really excited to dive into this season this year with a bit more context and knowledge, although not much, to be honest, because it's wild.
You have got so much knowledge. You are a knowledgeable bucket, Ellie.
Thanks so much.
A knowledgeable bucket?
Oh, you're a bucket full of knowledge.
Great words of affirmation.
Is that not a saying? I don't know.
A knowledgeable bucket. She's got your name wrong and called you a knowledgeable bucket since you've been on the podcast. Are you glad you came in?
I'll take it. Do you know what I mean? I'll take it.
She's having a great time.
Yeah, exactly.
And when we last spoke to you, you said that Formula One was like Succession but with cars. Do you still stand by that?
That is quite wise, actually.
It's a great analogy.
Yeah, I've never seen Succession, but I stand by it. Yeah.
You've never seen Succession?
No, I don't like bad people, so it stresses me out.
Mate, get out of F1.
Yeah, true. It stresses me out. But I'm happy for everyone that watched it. And I know what happens, so you can spoil it if you want. I'm never going to watch it.
You're also keen on developing a watching routine. Mm-hmm. Has that sort of come to fruition?
Yes. Yeah, so this year I'm going to combine our meals with where the F1 race is in the week.
Excellent.
And I was going to do a TikTok series, and then I filmed maybe one thing and I was like, no, this is too much. So I'm just eating the food from the places rather than filming it because I can't be bothered with that.
And you're doing that for every race?
Yeah. Hoping to.
What did you do for Saudi Arabia?
Well, luckily I lucked out because I googled it and apparently shawarma, and I was just like, great, I love a kebab, so I just made a shawarma kebab.
Absolutely. And that's good. And they do those in Bahrain as well.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Australia is good because obviously breakfast is a massive thing in Australia and it's a morning race, so it's all worked out very well. I don't have to be eating a full meal at 6 a.m.
Have you bought any food for us?
Well, yeah, I've been set up here. Yes, I have.
And for those listening to the podcast, Ellie has just got up to the back of the studio.
So, really exposing myself here. It was your birthday a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, oh, I know what would be nice. I'll bring you some donuts. But the bag is really soggy because it is piddling it down today. And also, I stacked it on the tube because my shoes were so slippy. They're the world's soggiest, most sat-on donuts. But
Stacked it on the tube?
Yeah, my shoes are really slippy, but happy birthday. Good. The bag is not, as you can see.
Happy
belated birthday, Betty.
I didn't get you anything, mate.
No,
sorry.
I know you didn't. Don't worry, it was noted.
No, I didn't get Betty anything for her. It smells like till September, don't worry.
They smell great.
I thought you were smelling them to check they weren't off. She's not going to bring you off donuts.
No, I was smelling, they just smell nice.
Everything else went wrong with them, so they might well be.
That's true. And we've got a coffee on the go, haven't we?
Yeah, this has cheered me up because I hate being 29. It feels too old.
Oh, that's tragic.
I know, it's really got to me, actually.
You're too old to be an F1 driver.
Starting to. Yeah, I know. My career would... Well, actually, I don't know. Maybe my career would be peaking if I was a Formula One driver.
Maybe.
Try being 49 like Greg.
Oh, no. God. God help him. He's not here to defend himself, so you can't do that. Ellie, any highlights from this year so far, do you reckon?
I think the fact that only two people have led an F1 race so far and one of them is Lando Norris, I think that's a good, great stat. And also what you discussed with Sophie on the podcast a few weeks ago, Lando's Drive to Survive, which I know is technically last year, but Lando's, when he said to Lance about on Drive to Survive, I just thought that was brilliant.
That was Christian's personal highlight,
yeah.
I think.
Part of her job involves having to put in meetings with Aston. Like, what was the Google Calendar invite? What did it say? Like, debrief re- Like, I've got questions. I've got loads of questions.
Yeah, what would you title that?
You wouldn't, would you really?
Something I'm always really interested in with people who've just got into the sport is like, let's be honest, you've not necessarily got into the sport at a perfect time because there was no title battle last year. Early signs suggest there won't be this year. And yet I'm fascinated as someone who's been with the sport since the late 90s that we're still seeing new fans come into the sport. What has made you fall in love with it at a time when the sport has in some areas got criticism for the fact that the same person's winning?
Great question.
Thanks, Betty.
Don't sound surprised. It's his job.
This is the level of respect I get on this podcast. Don't worry.
I think, well, first of all, I just don't really think about first because, as you say, it's pretty much a given. So for me, the title race is for second. Mm. That's a good way of dealing with it, I think. But what I love about F1 is that there are so many moving parts to it. It's not just the drivers, it's the mechanics, it's the strategy, it's the race strategists. Like, I really love how many different elements there are to it. And I just think it's really this isn't necessarily something you should like about something, but the fact that it's so elite, like they're the 20 best people in the world at
sure.
That's quite a unique thing for a sport, I think. It's a really small pool. And so it's always amazing to see the best of the best doing what they're good at.
Absolutely.
I also love it because it's such a team sport.
Mm.
Like, you don't think it's a team sport. Yeah. When you're a casual fan, you're like, okay, it's just, you know, but that one driver driving for a team, mm-hmm. fighting for themselves, but there's such a massive team behind
yeah,
it.
Yeah, definitely. And I just think it's really interesting. And I love how much visibility you get on it as well. Obviously, I don't know what it was like previously, kind of pre-Drive to Survive years, but the amount of kind of visibility you have on the messages that they get and on all the mechanics and all the stats, I just think it's really fascinating to kind of get that deep level.
And it's the thing that Drive to Survive's, I think, done the best is shone a light on the moving parts and the storylines. And more on that on the podcast coming very soon, by the way. But Ellie, to take it back to what we were talking about when we first brought you in and what obviously we've spoken about with Laura, I felt a couple of times in the last couple of weeks, it's like, oh, this hasn't been an easy time for F1. It's also, as Laura said, you know, sometimes felt difficult to be a female fan of F1. How have you found the last couple of weeks? Has it dented your love for the sport in any way?
I think disappointed but not surprised is how I would explain sure. How I feel about it. I think the most surprise or the most disappointing thing about it, I think, is how some of the drivers have responded, how some of the people you wouldn't necessarily expect have responded. You know, some of the drivers have said stuff like, I just like racing, which is just a bit disappointing when, sure, you like racing, but you're paid a lot of money to do something and you've got a really good platform, you know. And I think especially with Lewis as such a great example of what drivers can be doing with their platform, I think it's just a bit disappointing when people that you cheer on and really want to do well every week won't do the same for you.
Do you find it hard, like, not knowing what the full situation is? Like, almost like the lack of transparency?
Yeah, definitely. It's like, it's just been a very weird, you know, getting dribs and drabs, getting some of it via Reddit, and there's so much of it is shrouded in mystery. It does feel a bit like you don't know what's actually real. And what I really appreciated when you were discussing it in the Bahrain debrief with Greg was that Greg and you were shouting out the people who were affected by it as well, not just the kind of immediate people, but everyone that the shockwaves will have kind of gone out for. Yeah, because it's just, it's so, nobody knows what's going on really, do they? Apart from the people that do know, obviously. But
And obviously it's hard because they can't say everything because of legal issues.
Yeah.
But I think it's just difficult as females, either working in the sport or watching the sport as a fan or whatever. It's just hard knowing what the situation is. It's doesn't sit with you well. But we asked some of our followers what they thought at the moment, and people like Lily have said that it's been disappointing. Christopher said, as much as we all love some of the off-track drama, this whole thing just feels unsavory. Kerry says she was embarrassed to call myself a Formula One fan this week, and other people have said that they just want to focus on the racing. It's quite hard, isn't it?
It is hard. There's been various points in Formula One's history where there's been difficult moments. I don't remember anything quite like this. And I think the reality is, when Christian arrived at the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix weekend and said, we need to move on now, I think exactly as you two have just said, the fact that so much of it is still unknown means that it's not for Christian to decide when we move on. Formula One fans invest a lot of time and money into this sport, and they will decide when it's time to move on, and the great journalists that are in the paddock, because there's still an awful lot unknown. And I think, you know, what we all want, we love Formula One on this podcast. We celebrate the sport. We look for the good in the sport. We celebrate the drivers, the personalities. It's something that enriches all of our lives. So it's therefore such a shame when there's an unfortunate mystery, a negativity surrounding it, and it's something I hope comes to an end soon and in the right way, because while Formula One fans feel, I don't fully know what's gone on here, it feels unfinished, it feels unsatisfying, it feels uncomfortable. I think we all want to be able to move back to the racing, because look at the Oliver Bearman story, for example. You know, it was so wonderful to be able to focus on what Formula One does best, provide a brilliant sporting story. That's what we want to be able to go back to focusing on full time.
Yeah, and it's hard because you can't. We're not just going to sit here and ignore everything that's going on.
You can't.
We can't do that. So Christian, we're not moving on. Thank you very much.
Well, we will temporarily, because you've obviously came to visit us in our lovely new podcast home.
Yep.
You've also been very active over the last year. You've been one of our wonderful listeners who sends us questions. So for me and Betty, while you're here in person, face to face, do you want to do the sort of question postbag, but in person? Any questions for us at all?
I think my main question is how the strategists and the drivers, do they follow the drivers or do they work for the team? Like, is it like an agent where they work for the driver or do they work for the team, and will they possibly move when the drivers move?
The simple answer to that is it depends team to team.
Mm.
Strategists in particular tend to stay more team focused,
right,
because strategy by its very nature is a dual purpose part of it. So for example, last year, he's got a different role now, but our friend of the podcast, Randy Singh, he was head of McLaren's race strategy. Mm-hmm. And me, Betty and Greg were lucky enough to be in the Silverstone in the McLaren garage. You know, we were hearing some of the radio communications, and you know, Randy wasn't just thinking about Lando's race, he was also thinking about Oscar's race as well, and how the two can work together and use it together. So strategists tend to have a team focus. That said, you know, there will always be examples in Formula One history where a driver has got on well with a particular personnel, particular staff, and then when they've moved on, they've come with them. But generally speaking, strategists tend to be more team focused.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, because I could see arguments either way for it, like the fact that it's, because obviously the strategy is part of the whole team, but then it's so dependent on the driver that if you kind of get in a, and I can imagine it's so personal that if you get in a groove with one, as you say, that you really like, you're like, I'm going to hop over to Ferrari now, come with me.
There are elements of F1 where it's one side of the garage versus another. You always want to beat your teammate. But the thing that is the most important, we've said this on this podcast so many times, the thing that's most important for the team is the Constructors' Championship. So you need a strategist who is in the middle of the two garages. If you had a situation where one strategist was looking at one driver and one was looking at another, that could cause a lot of friction within a team. You need someone to take a broad focus. And that's why they tend to stay with the team rather than move with the driver. But I bet there'll be examples in history where someone's moved along because drivers do have a lot of influence and drivers like the people who they work with.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Just obsessed with this sport. It's the only sport where, like, you're competing against each other as drivers, but you're also for the same team. I just love the dynamics.
Yeah,
it's the drama, Mick. We just love it.
Any more questions, Ellie?
I don't think so for now, thank you.
Okay, for now. Yeah, so you might pop up with some random ones.
The Instagram feed's always open. That's just true. Whack us into more questions anytime you like.
Just slide into our DMs, yeah. Ellie. While we're on listener questions, we've had this in from listener Danny. Now, she sent us a link to the story about former Formula One driver Felipe Massa suing the FIA and Formula One with the simple phrase, "Oh, can you guys explain what's going on here, please?" I think there's only one person in the studio who can deal with this one. Me.
Producer Jimmy. No. Now, this could be a long answer, but I'm going to make sure it isn't. But with the caveat, there's plenty out there to Google if you want to. So this all centres around a scandal in 2008 called Crashgate. Google Singapore Crashgate if you want to find out a little bit more about this, because we could go on all day about this. But this scandal happened in 2008 at the Singapore Grand Prix. Renault were found guilty of instructing their number two driver, Nelson Piquet Jr., to crash on purpose in order to give their number one driver, Fernando Alonso, an advantage because it brought out a safety car. Now, Felipe Massa argues that race should have been declared null and void. If that race had been declared null and void, he would have won the 2008 Formula One World Championship. Instead, because of the points that were awarded in that race, and of course all the other races, it went down to the final race, and there was that very, very famous, which even newer fans will probably have seen clips of, moment where Lewis Hamilton passed the Toyota driver Timo Glock on the last lap of the Brazilian Grand Prix, and on the last corner of the last lap, won the championship. And there was the scenes where Felipe's dad was cheering, and then they realised that Lewis had made up the final position he needed to on the final lap. And therefore, all these years on, Felipe's decided, well, actually, no, that race in the middle of the season should have been declared null and void. If that had happened, those points wouldn't have been awarded. That would have been given me enough to win the championship. So he's suing and hoping that a judge will rule in his favour, and therefore, he will be declared the 2008 world champion all of these years on. That's the crux of the argument. Would you like to know what I think about his argument?
Yeah, but keep it quick. We don't have all day.
Sure. Total nonsense.
Also, Felipe, slide into our DMs. Let us know what you think. We're here. Your thoughts, your feelings. Just let us know.
He used to work for the sport not long ago. Not doing that anymore, is he? Anyway.
Oh, dear. Ellie?
Does that explain everything? Are we all clear?
Well, as clear as you can be on a nonsense thing, yeah.
I'm with you. Any further questions?
Yeah, relatedly, what's the point of the FIA if they don't do their job? Just a question I have. What do they do?
Okay, I mean, the FIA are the sport's governing body.
But do they
govern? We're going down a rabbit hole here, aren't we?
Because, so, Zak Brown did an interview about kind of all the allegations and said, you know, the thing that he's disappointed in is that the FIA haven't stepped in and clarified anything, which I find really interesting because it does feel like the FIA don't take particularly quick action in a famously very quick sport.
I think that is not an uncontroversial opinion, that the FIA could be more decisive. We mentioned earlier that the Haas situation this weekend. I certainly think the FIA could be improved in terms of its penalty giving on over the course of a race weekend. With regards to Crashgate in particular, this was a long time ago, and very, you know, not everyone involved would have been involved at the time. But yeah, that's not a controversial opinion, that the FIA could be slicker with their governing of the sport. That's not an uncontroversial opinion at all.
Okay,
we could go down all sorts of rabbit holes with this, especially with stuff in the news at the moment. So, should we end it there? I've just got one thing that you need to do for us, Ellie.
I'm not doing McLaren news.
No, I'm not asking you to do that.
Okay, thank God.
I'm asking you to sign our helmet.
You're joking. That's going to devalue its street value, but fine.
No, you've got to do it. You're on. Hold on.
Betty's leaving her sofa, which is, as we were discussing before we started recording, more difficult to get out of than you realise. These sofas, they are quite deep. And thanks to the person on YouTube who commented that I was disappearing into the sofa during last week's episode, which was completely true.
Complete camouflage. Yeah, it's just a floating head at the moment.
It's very deep. You just fall in.
This is wild. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
There you go.
Keep it small, Ellie, because we need room for Charlotte.
Yeah. Also, I'm not exactly the.
Hey, listen,
well, you can bring me back in when Charles wins.
It's an equal opportunities helmet.
That's unusual for an F1.
Yeah. Ellie loves a political point, doesn't she?
So sorry.
Ellie, just finally, before we let you go, next race is Australia, so that'll be the next food thing. Now, it's a 4 a.m. race start. Mm-hmm. Are you telling me that you're going to be up to get breakfast at 4 a.m?
Yeah, why not?
Good luck to you. I'll be waking up at 3:57. Yeah,
I'm
going to
push 3:59, I think.
And maybe still manage breakfast?
Well, yeah, but it's going to be like pastries or something, isn't it?
I'll
put it next to my bed
on,
the night before.
Fine, very good.
That's the plan.
I'm not waking up for that, if anyone cared.
Betty Glover, host of a Formula One podcast.
No, but it's my friend's 30th on the Saturday night. I'm
so
not
you're
waking
gonna still
up.
Be up?
Straight through crew.
Yeah.
Straight through crew.
Anyway, it'll be time to discuss that next week. Ellie, thank you for coming in. Lovely to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you for signing our helmet.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ellie, for joining us. And also, thank you so much for listening to The Fast and the Curious. You can catch us on socials at Fast Curious Pod on Twitter, Instagram. We're on TikTok. We're also on YouTube. We're basically everywhere around the internet.
Everywhere on the internet you could ever be. Keep your questions coming in. Any more for us, as Betty says, social media is the place to send them. We will be back next week. Until then, bye for now.
Bye.